Hi, this is Steve from Survive to Thrive, a radio network. We hope you're finding the information on the Survive to Thrive, a radio program, both beneficial and informative. Fridays will bring you replays of my most popular shows with occasional live appearances. We have our lineup for the rest of the week of talk show hosts together to give you the best information and points of view available on the radio. They're certainly the most pertinent and timely. Monday's Darren is on with his show, Radical Health. Steve St. Clair and Darren are on Wednesday with Health Freedom. Russ Dizdar is on Tuesdays with Shatter the Darkness, and Hawks Talon is on Thursdays, and me on Fridays. So stay tuned to Survive to Thrive Network.com, or you can go to stevequayle.com. Click on the radio Listen Live at the top of the page of stevequayle.com to bring you to all the new sites, and especially to be able to click on the important radio information. Now, ladies and gentlemen, remember, in these trying times, it's incredibly important to stay healthy. Keep yourself well nourished with organic fruits and vegetables, and remember to take Enerfood every day without fail. Drinking a healthy smoothie with Enerfood and coconut milk powder from EnerHealth Botanical provides you with easily absorbable nutrition from superfoods that are densely packed with essential nutrients, all of which support optimal health. The guys at EnerHealth continue to offer special pricing to our listeners. They also offer the Survival Pack and Herbal Emergency Packs, as well as their tasty immune-supporting coffee, Nutra Cafe, and their hot cocoa blend, Coco Mojo, which is one of my wife's favorites, both infused with immune-strengthening medicinal mushrooms. Now, they're wonderfully flavorful and very, very healthy. Check out all their specials at survivetothrive.net or click on the EnerHealth banner at stevequayle.com. In fact, listen, these guys have one of the best deals I've ever seen. They have their immune pack, which is one Enerfood, one coconut milk powder, and their daily immune support, which is on sale for $99.99. You save $32. Their Nutra Cafe is also on special this week, and it costs only $10.99. In addition, they are still offering 15% off on cases, and 10% you get just by being one of our listeners. That's a 25% discount, ladies and gentlemen. Never forget, your body is your most important possession, and its optimal health stays very dependent upon being well hydrated with pure water. Now, the guys at Enerfood are selling the Big Berkey water filters, and you can call them at 866-762-9238. That's 866-762-9238 to order any of their health specials or the Big Berkey water filter. What will you aid in achieving the best health possible is to stay informed. And never forget, everyone, that your body's the temple. Give it pure foods and beverages as God nature intended, and see your body, mind, and spirit once again enjoying the joyful state of health that is a blessing.
Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Survive to Thrive. Stan Dale, we're on our second hour, and I just want to share this before we go back to our interview with Stan. I have unsolicited, and obviously I'm off the radio, so I'm not on the radio pitching products every night. But the point is one of the guys that we've asked you to pray for over the last couple of years is Porcupine Glenn. Hawk prayed for him a couple Thursdays ago, and he sent me the most wonderful email. He's been in and out of the hospital so many times that I think they have a ward named after him, and I'm not making fun of that. But he sent me an email saying, Steve, it was the Enerfood and the Gatorade, and I thought, Glenn, good way to mix that stuff that he attributes to basically keeping him alive. Now, look, I'm not out there soliciting these guys. They're sending it to me, and with the issues now of the volcanism going off in Iceland, soon to be worldwide, the growing season and the ability to acquire the raw materials in Enerfood is going to become more difficult. So I'd encourage everybody, seriously, I actually carry a case of that in my bug-out vehicle, and the point that I'm trying to make for and with everyone is that I don't know a better thing. Now, you got to mix this stuff with Gatorade, or you got to put it in a smoothie, because let's just say this, unless you like the taste of it, and I've talked to both Steve and Darren about this, but if you mix it with Gatorade, and I thought, yes, Glenn, good job, you can really get a lot of nutrition, and nutrition is going to be the key. So call the guys at EnerHealth, 866-762-8238. Again, 866-762-9238. Eyes are blurry. 866-762-9238, and get a case of Enerfood. Well, Stan, we're on our second hour now, so I'm just going to be absolutely, you go for the bottom line. Before you and I spoke tonight, I said, this may be the last time we get to talk together. So say everything you want to say, warn everyone with what you want to warn everyone about, and don't hold back.
All right, Steve. You know, while we were talking last hour, I kind of thought of something that I read in the Bible. I'm sure you're familiar with it. That the Lord says, my people die for lack of knowledge. And I think more than ever, this time that we're in will underscore that. In fact, that scripture was almost written for this time more than any other time in the past. Because the majority of people in various churches, religions, let's call them, I guess, have been put to sleep. Comfortable pews, social gospel, parties, barbecues, not really getting into the Word and the meaning of the Word. When I was in Australia still, many years back, I helped to build a church brick by brick, and where we actually got secondhand bricks and chipped the mortar off so we had enough to build a church with. It took us a lot of Saturdays sitting out there in a pile of brick chipping. But anyway, in that church, we got to talking, and I was a deacon in the church, and we decided that we would start teaching ourselves Hebrew so we could get deeper into the meaning of the word, back to the most original source of the Bible, back in the Torah, the first five books, called the Pentateuch in the Christian community. So we sent off to New York to Behrman House, that's B-E-H-R-M-A-N, might be two N's at the end, House. It's on my website anyway, hidden on my page. Anyway, we sent off to them and got some booklets and manuals to teach us at a primary school level how to understand and recognize and pronounce the alphabet, in Hebrew. It's almost like ours. The alphabet is very similar in sound and structure. And then we were able to put them into words and to use the vowels properly. And we did all this on Saturday mornings. We get together down at the church house, about 12 couples, and study it this way. So we got to the point where we could recognize words in a flashcard, just like gangbusters. Someone would hold up a six-letter Hebrew word, and it'd be a contest to shout out, "Oh, that is bashar," meaning meat, and so forth. Which, by the way, where the word bazaar came from, where they had the meat bazaars, the bashar. So we got to a point where we wanted to dig in and start translating using some of the analytical Chaldean Hebrew Arabic lexicon that have translations of every verb, every adjective, every noun that we know of in those ancient languages. And so you could just read the Hebrew and then break it apart and translate it. And we did something there with the Exodus, the crossing of the Exodus, the Red Sea. And we were actually able to take military maps, U.S. military maps, very high-resolution ones of that area, of the Sinai Peninsula, and determine where they went day by day from the Hebrew account by breaking the words into their basic components and putting it back together in English, which takes about 35 times as many words as it does in Hebrew because we're translating to our language and trying to explain the nuance, the colloquial usage of these words. Anyway, that became a real investigation project for us, and we then moved it to Friday night because Saturday was conflicting with some of the social schedule. But we found that other churches could benefit by this, because if you start digging into the word, whether it be in the Greek or the Hebrew — we chose Hebrew because it's the oldest — you start to get down past the translators and what bias there may have been or what lack of knowledge there may have been when they translated about current events. And you can see the importance of the scripture or what is hidden there. And it's not hidden on purpose. It's just that we aren't raised with the Hebrew language as our main language.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, you know, most people don't understand where the word Hebrew came from. When the Tower of Babel or Babel was being built, there was a tribe called Eber, and they were the only ones that didn't partake in the building. And basically, you can look this up on Wikipedia, and they were allowed to have the pure tongue. Now, it's interesting because if you go into angel glyphs or the specific, and most people have ever seen any one of those science fiction movies on angels, whether it's a prophecy series or whatever, fallen angels, etc., they always have angel glyphs. But Eber, the tribe of Eber, were the only ones that did not partake in it. And because of that, God basically allowed them to have the pure language or the first tongue, if you will. And it's fascinating because when you look at the angel glyphs, it is so unusual. In other words, they say a word is, or it used to, what, a picture is worth 1,000 words. In this case, some words are worth 1,000 pictures.
Mm. Well,
I don't know if you knew that, but it's kind of a fascinating thing.
I've heard that.
And it's really interesting because, again, the idea of words, and that's why every word that has what I would call historic contextual meaning has been bastardized. Now, let me describe the word bastard so people don't send me their religious spirit thing. The word bastard was specifically applied by God in the book of Enoch to the offspring of the fallen angels and the earth woman who produced the giants. The fallen angels did not possess earth men to then have sex. They can change their, quote, size and shape accordingly. The giants, on the other hand, when they grew up with accelerated DNA and everything else that went along, they had a whole different set of problems, and there are historic writings from the 15th century about God literally taking lightning from heaven and destroying entire groups of giants that would literally, and I don't know any other way to say this, but would literally pillage the native women and rape them to death. And I won't go into the graphic detail, but it is chronicled. So the point being is that now we're dealing with the search for, if you will, alien DNA, alien life form. And Stan, I remember a show you and I did almost 5 years ago talking about the archaeobacteria that would be unloosed, or loosed, if you will, through the drilling in the Antarctic. You remember that?
Yep.
And now I also remember the time that you and I did a whole story on methane, and that depending on the volcanism and the plate tectonics, that literally the seas could catch fire, just like they did in Papua New Guinea, you know, 10 years ago. So it's fascinating to me that for all of our critics, for my critics, your critics, our critics, and those who just basically want to dismiss God from their thoughts, the idea is that 10 years ago, and now 10 years ago, the warnings are today's headlines. And I find that fascinating. And I find
it
even more fascinating that we're talking today, on again, the 29th of April, about the greatest deception that's ever been launched and that ever will be launched, and the most horrific period in time that's ever been. And I guess my chief concern is that people think this is somehow a cakewalk like it was in 1776. And I don't know how to make someone get it, that this is beyond anything that their minds, outside of the Spirit of God in mercy revealing to them. It's really tough to wrap your brain around some of this. I understand that.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that I wanted to encourage groups within various churches and religions, no matter what they are, but you're basically Christian, to get together and learn how to translate these old languages themselves so that they can get down to the meat. This is the milk pablum we get in the superficial structure of Scripture. Get down into the meat of it, where it occurred, why it occurred. We just found it so bonding, so strengthening of our faith between all of us that we're doing this study together, that there's just no substitute for knowledge of the truth.
Well, it's right, just, and even in Greek, let's just take this. The word love, three different words for love in Greek. You know, obviously, people that just read love, they don't understand there's a difference between agape or agape love and erotic love or brotherly love. You know, and this is the thing that really, I told over the years, I've invented words because there's no contemporary word that expresses what I'm trying to get across. I'm sure they exist in ancient language, you know.
Yeah.
But the point that I think that people have got to understand is that when the Lord Jesus himself said, "Lo, I come in the volume of the book, it is written of me to do thy will, O God," what volume of what book is he writing about? You know, I won't argue with people that they say, "Well, the book of Enoch isn't in my Bible, therefore I'm not going to read it." And I say, well, then you're dismissing what Peter, James, and Jesus himself referred to. And you know, here's the thing. If people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, then conversely, by the right knowledge, and I say this, taught them and dealt to them by the Spirit of God, then there's preservation of knowledge. A warning is only good, is it not, Stan, as much as it's heeded?
Absolutely.
And, you know, like again, I'll go right to the cosmic conspiracy. You know, it's funny, the conspirators have made anybody that tells the truth conspiracy nuts. Yet these are the most corrupt, evil, conniving, wicked, plotting, planning, scheming, lizardian or reptilian mindset protagonists of evil that have ever gotten together. So, you know, it should come as no wonder that, and I get it every day. I mean, I've got one of my sons, he's getting a little bit more, but if it isn't on Fox, he doesn't believe it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I said, what does a Fox do? And again, I'm not trying to make this overly spiritual, but I think people really got to see what's in their face. And then I say, what good, oh Lord, does it do if people won't acknowledge what's obvious? Why go into the obscurity? I get emails like this. I'm sure you do, too. I know Holly's told me you get calls in the wee hours of the morning, people wanting to discuss something with you, but they want me to tell them, quote, secret stuff. I say, listen, what good would it do for you to know secret stuff if you won't do anything with the open stuff, you know? And seriously, that's my thing, you know? I mean, I guess I've got everybody in the world of, you know, esoteric knowledge, basically, trying to pick my brain. I've got three offers today for that. And I just say, it's not right. It's just not right. So take it to the bottom line now. Let's say this, Stan. This is our last show together, okay? And everything you've studied up until this time, everything you've written up until this time, and everything that you have been on talk radio about, just spell it out.
Wow. Well, basically, it has been over the years to educate people, first of all, to the terrestrial conspirators who were plotting to form a world government that was going to be favoring the whip or the lash, the dictatorship. It is odd that I have actually written that cosmic conspiracy book and done all the work along that line, because in high school, English literature was kind of not my brilliant subject, and I was more of math, physics, chemistry, science, you know, and reading all that stuff and writing books or, you know, short stories wasn't my thing at all. And after a near-death experience I had in about 1969, and went out there and reviewed my life and was ready to stay out there, I was sent back. And within 2 hours of being sent back, I got up out of bed where I was very ill and got in the car and drove to a nearby all-night cafe to have breakfast. And while the waitress was gone to get my order placed to the cook, I scribbled on a napkin a drawing of the earth as seen from out in space, and there were saucers coming to the earth from somewhere, and I had written the title Diagnosis, The Creation Conquest. Now that was the first working title of The Cosmic Conspiracy, a book which I would not write for another 9 years. And I would not write it in America. I would write it 12,000 miles away in Australia, and not as an American citizen, because they'd taken away by that time. I was an exile in Australia. So just that, looking back on that, tells you the Lord had his hand on me, even though I wasn't on board to start with entirely. He woke me up, educated me, took me clear across the planet to somewhere else, to a country where, you know, I was surrounded by people that were strangers, but yet became good friends. And good Christian brothers and sisters as well. Whereas if I had stayed home and tried to do that, I'd have been laughed out of, you know, existence by my own country, for a prophet is not without, is without honor in his own country, you know. So the bottom line is, read that book, The Cosmic Conspiracy. I've divided it into three sections in the original 200 pages, which are exactly as they were 20 years ago, into three sections to tell you, all right, where, what I did, how I got to the knowledge of where I am, and what I've said, and then the conspiracy, the Illuminati, all that kind of stuff, the U.S. dollar bill, the Great Seal of the United States, all that kind of stuff, in the second section. The third section is a discussion in real words, average words, of why we are in the situation we're in now as humanity, why apparently terrible things like famine, death, plague deaths, wars, why all this is permitted by God, and there's a good reason for it. done with the knowledge you have by speaking to God direct wherever you are. And that is why that book is so important, because that third section is your ticket to salvation, your ticket to get out of what's coming, to be preserved if you're having to be here for the first part of it. But anyway, that would be my bottom line of that book, is it educates you into what has gone past, what is currently happening, and what you need to watch out for in the next few months, even, before we get to the distribution of the nations into this new world order, which people will run, rush, and leap to get income again, and to have the weather control and stuff like that.
And basically, again, the thing that you've been warning people, obviously, I think you and I have been together, I think Holly told me, for 9 years, and the thing is that trying to get people to prepare for the unanticipated but truly expected, and let's even put a new word into the equation, the revelation of things to come. How soon now, with everything, let me ask you a question. This will make it easier for you, I think. How soon, based on the fact that now that which used to be cloaking devices, everything is being cloaked or uncloaked, or one nation's blowing the whistle on another nation's technology. We're seeing things. We're hearing that, of course, Mars now has water on it, or frozen water. The moon has water on it, blah, blah, blah. Obama's new statement, we're going to Mars. We're seeing a change, if you will, in the general information base. In other words, it's like it's in your face now. Would that not lead most people to believe that they're ready for their annunciation?
Yes, and it doesn't matter whether they're Christian believers or not. Most people will look forward to that and say, yeah, hey, that could be an answer to problems. I think President Reagan was one of the first leaders to come out with a leak, as it were, about wouldn't it be interesting to see us all pull together in the face of a common alien enemy.
Right.
But Stephen Hawking and Albert Einstein, they both realized the importance of God. But Hawking has gone further here recently, saying that don't trust the alien. I mean, you know, these are thinking men, very brilliant men. And I think that we could draw a lesson from what they've said and what they've done. One of the interesting things that I find is that the Christian community seems to be divided from the secular community by secular community mainly being scientific or engineering or physics or Fox TV, you know, based, whereas the Christians have faith and understanding, and then they can read facts and understand what it means and accept it rather than rejecting it out of hand because it doesn't fit to their template of axioms of physics or whatever. But one of the things that will convince a lot of the engineers and physicists and logical-minded people that the aliens are truly gods, little g, is their technology to do things that we think are impossible. And this is a great sadness that we're not teaching in physics today some of the alternate views of why things happen in fluid mechanics for physics. Because if they would teach anti-gravity in the schools, and what's positive, a craft that is 2 miles in diameter would not be a big deal. Oh, it would be, but I mean, it's understandable, right? But
right.
What's going to happen is because this knowledge has been held back from our students of engineering, physics, and mathematics over the last probably 5 decades, since it's been withheld from them, when they see, and I know this firsthand because I've debated with physics professors in universities here in Australia, when they see firsthand a large saucer craft supported up there in the air, the first thing they're going to say is impossible because the fuel required to hold it at that altitude for that long, even over 10 minutes, is so much that they wouldn't have enough fuel on board to do it, and there's no obvious thrusters or flames, so it's impossible. It's a trick. It can't be. And when they realize that it is and watch this big craft move rapidly, they're just going to be astounded thinking it's superior metals with greater strength than we've got, because obviously if you had a ship 2 miles long or wide or in diameter, if you had a beam of steel running across the ship lengthwise or sideways, it was 2 miles long, the weight of that steel would make it bend like a rubber band. Okay, it wouldn't be rigid because of gravity pulling on it. But what they don't know and don't apply to their view of that is that if you take a 30-foot diameter saucer craft and put a local gravity field on it so that gravity comes from the tip of the saucer toward the center, falls toward the center, and you hook a bunch of these craft up together, as many as you want, enough to make up a 2-mile diameter craft. then each of those areas controls the weight and the inertia of the iron bars and stuff, so that they won't bend, because they won't be over 30 feet long in their local gravity field. That way, we can accomplish what appears to be the impossible. And because gravitational fields can be stored, they can be spun up like a gyroscope and stored in the energy around the ship, they don't need flame thrusters to hold them up in orbit. The energy is stored, it gradually abates and dissipates, so they have to keep topping it off. But this, again, would explain to these skeptics in the technical community why these things appear to violate the laws of physics that man has made from his observations from a very limited perspective. That's my long rant for you. How's that?
Well, no, and quite candidly, the laws of physics have been substituted by the displaced by the lies of physics. You know, again, when you explained electrogravitics, and everybody, and by the way, even the web bots are talking about the Chinese possessing new electrics and that it's going to change the world. One of my friends who's listening to this interview right now in real time in Beijing, very well aware of the new energy forms that the Chinese have basically purchased on the world market because they were able to outbid Russia and the U.S. And the thing is that the whole idea of electrogravitics, where it used to be, you know, basically a book relegated or delegated to the back of the library shelf or in the rare book section on Amazon or, you know, the just a very few of them published, now it's coming forward and people are actually watching these things cloak and uncloak in real time. They're actually watching them. And when I say people, I'm talking when you got 10, 20, 30,000 eyewitnesses, you know, even the FBI can't make those people go away.
No. And you remember the Philadelphia experiment years ago?
Exactly.
Okay, they did produce invisibility in the visible spectrum, but originally what they did was that the Eldridge, the minesweeper, what they wanted to do was to fit up for certain coils on it to generate a particular kind of moving or dynamic electric field around and through the ship so that when they got close to Europe where the into North Africa where the German radar bases were, that they could not see this ship because it would be invisible. If they could do the same thing in the air, then the aircraft would be invisible to radar because radar would bend around it. It wouldn't bounce back to the receiver. You know, the receiver at the German station where they were doing the radar. So when they did the experiment with the Eldridge in 1947, they pumped up the field, and to their surprise, not only did it bend radar around, which is electromagnetic radiation of a certain frequency, they bent visible light, which is also radiation, electromagnetic radiation of a certain frequency, or range of frequency. It bent the light so that they disappeared, and as they did, they disappeared in stages to the observers of the experiment. The ship, with all of its crew, started to glow, and then it disappeared. It went kind of transparent, disappeared, and there was a hollow left in the ocean where it was sitting in the ocean. You could see it, and then the hollow disappeared because at that time the ship had already moved away at high speed without anybody knowing it. But invisibility or cloaking is documented back to 1947, and we understand how it is. In fact, I even got this circuit from some naval data to see how they arranged the coils on that particular class of minesweepers so that they could be adapted readily to making spinning electromagnetic fields in the manner that produces gravity. So I'm just enforcing what you said. It's been around a long time. It's close to this.
You know, and I think people need to know that, obviously, you were recruited by Dr. Teller's group, and you know, basically, the reverse engineering on alien craft and anti-gravity propulsion, that's what you were working on, is it not, when you were recruited?
Well, I was working when I was recruited on a method of making a flying saucer that I was going to just, you know, patent, because I really wasn't aware of how much was being done behind the scenes. And the saucer I designed was going to take high voltage, high current in the center of the saucer and make it move charged atoms of air over and out through a little slit in the top and over the wing and underneath and back in again to form kind of like a spinning donut where the donut center was the center of the craft.
Well, Sam, hey, hold that thought. We're going to take a station ID. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Survive to Thrive. My very special guest, Stan Dale. These shows will be posted after the broadcast on my website, stevequayle.com. Go over to the right side of the page and look at the archives. I think you need to re-listen to these a couple times to get what we're trying to warn you about and inform you about. We'll be right back after this message.
Hi, this is Steve Quayle. Don't become a perpetual profit center for the system that's ruining our country. Now, I'm no socialist, but what these large corporations are doing to us and our country is horrific. Pharma Inc., Food Inc., Psychiatry Inc., you name it, folks, it's all about making money no matter what the cost, including poor health for all of us. I mean, how much evidence do you need? From the vaccines they're trying to force us to take to the genetically modified seeds that are ruining not only our food supply, but the small farmer that works to get us safe foods. It is time for all of us to take responsibility here and act to protect us and our family's health. The time is nearer that you will wish you had listened to those of us with warnings. One of our sponsors, EnterHealth Botanicals, has products that will get you prepared for any tough situation, from natural to man-made disaster. Enter Food and coconut milk powder, both incredible super nutritional products that will keep you going. It will extend the life of your dry foods immensely. The Berkey water filter is a must-have in any household. Water just doesn't come out the tap always, and you can't count on it. Berkeys don't require power, just any kind of water. Their filters and gravity do the rest to clean it up. These guys have great products at EnterHealth, all aimed at getting you to optimal state of health and out of the system. Stay healthy and don't allow the big corporation to clean up on your bad health. Go to survivetothrive.net, that's survivetothrive.net, and click on their banner for special discounts. Give them a call at 866-762-9238. That's 866-762-9238. Thank you.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the special broadcast of Survive to Thrive. This is a continuation of Shatter the Darkness, which is 1 hour previous to the show. Both will be archived on my website, www.stevequayle.com. Stan, too, let's do this because we're now into the last half hour. Do you want to just read the whole passage in Daniel, and then, and because we've touched, I think, on four verses, do you want to read it, if you would be so kind, sir, and then say what it really means?
Well, all right, let me see what I can find here. Just give me a second to look this.
And while you're looking for it, I don't know if you know this, but the reports coming in from Israel from different military, different intelligence agencies, is that literally, and you'll find this interesting, Stan, the Book of Enoch talks about the fallen angels coming down on Mount Hermon. There are supposedly meetings taking place right now with entities out of the craft that are 9 to 12 feet tall, and one guy said he was having a conversation with a kneecap. That's how big those guys were. And by the way, that was confirmed through, I believe, three or four different sources, unrelated, not listening to me or Hawk or you or anybody. So the thing is that I find it interesting that, again, that it, for those of you that don't understand, it was on Mount Hermon, and Dave Flynn's got a great explanation on why that geographical location was picked, where the fallen angels, the first 200 fallen angels, fell and committed sexual sin. And by the way, let me make this clear. Jesus said, in heaven they are neither given nor taken in marriage, but are as the angels. The book of Jude says the angels didn't stay in their created realm or the place that God put them and basically ordered them to stay. They came out of that realm and, due to their higher level of creation, interfered with the seed of man. They were trying to literally do away with the promise of the Messiah coming through the seed of a woman. So, I get, Stan, after I do a show like this, 100, well, Jesus said that angels don't have sex. That's in heaven. This, we're talking about our fallen angels on earth.
Well, so I don't know whether they didn't have sex. It just said that they weren't given and taken in marriage.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want to put any more onto it than that, but I will say that.
Again, I have answers, but I'm trying to be a little bit kinder and tamer.
All right, now, the when you mentioned Mount Hermon, it reminded me of something I wrote in the Vindicator Scrolls book when I was looking for Garden of Eden and found it, and Atlantis, and found that from old writing. The Greek.
Well, you might as well don't just say that now. People are going to say, where was the Garden of Eden?
Okay. The Garden of Eden was in Ethiopia in the Danakil Plain, which come from Ethiopia and go kind of northeastish into this flat plain area where all the volcanoes seal the area with lava. Which it's been a long time cool, but
the lava fields.
Yeah, the Danakil Plains are still very active, with geothermals and things like that. But that's why you can't go back and walk on the Garden of Eden, because it was buried in these magma flows from at least 12, maybe 13 volcanoes around the rim there. So we found the place where the river, where the water came out of Ethiopia, fell a huge drop down into the Danakil Plains. It hit the plains, which were the Garden of Eden, and then split at Djibouti. They hit the ocean, split into four major streams of rivers. And the actual seabed there is carved out. You can see it in the 3D models I got when we were modeling the Middle East.
Is that in Vindicator Scrolls?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've only got about 30 copies of that left in print. I'm not reprinting it anytime soon because it's so expensive in color. But we have some shop damage things that are left. That's all of our main stock is gone. But anyway, in that book, the rivers split, and they went up. The Red Sea was one, and it went up. It became the Jordan, and then the Jordan upward broken, and then down, and it became the Euphrates, the Tigris, that we found that one. And then the other two rivers were over when India was still joined to North Africa, but
right.
It split away. And it was using that technique I'm talking about when you translate Hebrew piece by piece. And try to get the fullest meaning of it in the terms of the verse and the stories going on. It does tell you that Havila was the land of gold and jewels and stuff, and of course that was India in those days. And it tells you where in when I was researching where Cain kicked out of the Garden of Eden went east into the land of Nod, which in Hebrew that word Nod is a verb meaning the men shall wander as fugitives, which was Cain with the mark on his head, right?
Right.
And they went up the Indus Valley, which is the Indus is a conjugation of the verb nud, where the men went up to build shelkot. I forget what it's called nowadays, modern names, but they've unearthed that particular city. And by doing all this, we found the Garden of Eden to be there. And then the natural adjunct to that was, where was Atlantis going into the Greek text? And translating the Greek, not translating the Greek, but putting it in the Hebrew idiom, because Greek and Hebrew are very similar. And I found out that the account was talking about Saudi Arabia from where the Jordan was, maybe even all of Israel at that time, I'm not quite sure, the Persian Gulf, the Red Sea, all of that was part of the ancient Atlantean empire.
Now, that's interesting, because when I talk to different people, what I would call even archaeologists, might interest people to know that there are special operations archaeologists and experts in what's underground. They talk about everything in that part of the world, and they've said to me so many times over the years, it's not what you see above ground, it's what's underground. Even when I did Coast to Coast the other night, I told George that the lady archaeologist that was talking about being allowed some access into the pyramids and different, I think a pyramid of Saqqara, and that's really a critical one because that's where all the ancients drew technology like helicopters and jets and stuff on the relief around the crown molding on some of the temples or parts of the temple. But what's interesting is that her reports paralleled exactly the reports of a special operations team that I got a briefing by one time, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, about just, again, what's underground. So, you know, it's fascinating to me that when anybody looks at the ancient civilizations or the ancient ruins, all they're usually concerned about, most people, is just, gee, those are neat old buildings, and look at the placement in relationship to the specific constellations, and I want to scream, and now I don't scream, I just, you know, become emphatically determined and say, no, 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 you don't understand. It's what's under the stuff that's the issue. And even in the book of Romans, Paul talks about us nothing being able to separate us from the love of God, things on the earth or under the earth, you know? And
right.
I think that's fascinating, and I think now getting into Atlantis, obviously, you know, when you trace it as you do, you know, that basically doesn't throw it out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
No, it's the interesting thing about it is I referenced, using the old form of microfiche in the libraries, I referenced a number of oil exploration surveys in the Ru'ab al-Khali, the empty quarter of southern part or southwestern part of Saudi Arabia. It's empty desert covered with sand and stones if you look at it. But in there, they found mines, surface-cut mines that were very, very old, they said. Thousands of years hadn't been worked in that long. But what they were mining there was a particular kind of red lead and copper. The things that that were spoken of in the Critias and Timaeus debate about the existence of Atlantis, that they mined copper and red lead and hammered it into a compound called, or made an alloy of it called orichalcum, that they coated rocks with because it's so malleable, but it was red gold and it glistened in the sunlight and it was a beautiful wall around the capital of Atlantis. Well, we found not one but several open-cut mines that were on the edge of a great forest that was now fossilized in the Ru'ab al-Khali of Saudi Arabia. Over near Oman, there were digs made probably 30, 40 years ago. They were digging down looking for Dilmun, the ancient civilization that would have been back, you know, what, 7,000 years ago, according to them. Anyway, that eventually was trading with people in India and up the Indus River Valley because they found a little trading ID markers, the icons for the traders that were carved in stone, many of them. But they also found above ground many graves on the surface, and people dug into those and found they were just burial graves, you know, for humans and so artifacts. But the deeper they were digging, they were finding that 80 feet down, the civilization was more advanced technologically. And when the Western archaeologists found that, the sheikh of the area said, right, that's it, everybody out, only my people will do it from now on. You guys leave the country, go. And that was because they were finding more advanced technology and things of great value down there. And the Baghdad batteries are a case in point in Iraq. Those clay pots with the iron core that's almost rotted out now, but those, if you poured lemon juice or fruit juice in, produced electricity. And that was up at a shallow dig, not deeper down after all the mud and stuff had covered it after the flood, I guess. I don't know when that occurred exactly, but that kind of stuff is not guesswork. You see that, you know, and that's fact. And from the oil exploration stuff, that was definitely not a prejudice to find. I mean, they didn't care about it. It all just happened to be something they noticed when they were looking for oil. And it's that whole area over in Saudi Arabia and right up to the Mediterranean is covered underneath with large amounts of oil and gas, huge amounts that still haven't even been tapped yet. Even in Israel, near the foot of Asher in the Jezreel Valley, and south of there into Caesarea, all of that is sitting on top of a gas deposit, a natural gas deposit that is like measured in a billion of barrels. It's just unbelievable. And deeper down in that area is an oil field. We're reasonably certain that it might have to be a 5-mile dig to get to it, but it is a huge oil field that is bigger than all of the Arab oil fields put together. And the rabbi that I was talking to and studying with many years ago in Australia was telling me, yeah, we know about the oil fields, and we can't actually start excavating it and refining it because our Arab neighbors said if we do, we'll be stealing their oil, and therefore it'll be an act of war. But the thing they tend to forget is that the Arab oil wells are up on shallow ground, shallow depth, and not deep at 5 miles where the Israeli deposit is, and the Israeli deposit is under huge pressure from the gas dome. So it's pushing the oil up into the wells that the Arabs have been, you know, mining. But the real oil, where it comes from, is all centered under Israel. And this
wow.
is one of the promises that God gave to them, that from beneath would come great treasures.
Well, again, getting into, you know, I believe that probably the greatest tragedy in teaching history, or the lack of teaching history, is so many answers to our future lie in the past. And, I mean, God even says, go back and remember the former things, okay? And we're not talking about fables, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody sent me an email today. Do you consider what you're talking about fables when I talk about the giants and the return of the days of Noah? I said, well, then you're accusing the Lord and Savior, who you claim to serve, of basically warning us of fables. No, the fables are that the aliens are here, they created us, and they're going to basically come and save us. And you know, Stan, the tragedy is that the power of deception is so great that the military has pretty much, there are exceptions, but the majority of the military are being told that, you know, those of a classified clearance level that will allow them to have that type of information are being told that the gods of the Sumerians are returning. So I say to them who are listening to this broadcast, does it not strike you as interesting that Jesus, who you guys won't even say his name, is the one telling you it's going to be just as in the days of Noah? And I think, seriously, the great earthquake, Stan, that's coming, and you and I have to address that together tonight. No offense, if this is the last time we do a show together, the Icelandic volcano being, if you will, the start, or what I would call the trigger point for the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and everything else that's going on. Holly, when she put up the story about how many earthquakes there are, and then they have this lady geologist who comes on mainstream TV and says, everything's normal, nothing's out of the norm, and the people in Iceland are saying, what do you mean nothing's out of the norm? The last time this volcano erupted, it was 2 years in eruption, you know?
It killed a lot of people there, too.
How do I say this? The control mechanism is such that unless people, and I'm serious about this, turn off the bloody mind melt murder machine, which is television, and start to seek literally the truth, even for those of you that don't believe in God, you know, ask him. Say, look, I don't believe in you, but if you're real, reveal yourself to me. The point is that you can arrive at conclusions when the television programming is turned off. And the biggest movie of the year, I thought it was horrid, was Avatar. You know, the thing is that if you don't understand the spiritual overtones in that movie, it's basically James Cameron totally attacking Christianity, which, by the way, he's the one trying to prove that Jesus had bones in a tomb. They didn't rise from the dead. So, you know, I doubt you're going to get any historic accuracy there. But the point that I'm trying to make, Stan, is that people are so mind-controlled that I doubt, and forgive me, there are probably 12 people listening to this broadcast, but the discipline it takes to seek out a matter is too great right now, because you've got a totally, in my opinion, apathetic, indifferent, or volatile and angry group of people that basically don't want to do their homework. They just want to challenge those who have done their homework.
You know, before we get too far along, you asked me to read that verse from Daniel, and I guess I better do that.
Yep.
There's two groups of four verses, Daniel 2:41 through 44. And then Daniel 11:36 through something rough, through 38, 39. I go down four from 11:36, so we're 7 at 40. 11:36, 37, 38, 39. Okay. Now, the first one that we are familiar with is from Daniel 2:41, where it says, "And whereas you saw the feet and toes, that were part of the potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with the miry clay." Now that's just verse 1, and he mentions in there potter's clay and miry clay. And then I note that when we go to the second verse down, Daniel 2:42, "And as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken." Now they use different words for clay. You know, they use the potter's clay, the clay, and miry clay. He used several different words for clay, and there were reasons for this in each verse. But when he translates it to English, it all becomes, miry clay or clay. And you skip over the fact that they're totally different words. I mean, totally different, not just a little different, totally different. And I found that started me to look into this is the deeper meaning of it. Daniel 2:43 says, "And where you saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men." This is talking about the iron ones, the alien ones, who are going to mix with the seed of man. "But they shall not cleave one to the other. They won't take well in the crossbreeding, even as iron is not mixed with the clay." And you can see here, you know, what I'm talking about. It's just difficult to understand the finer meaning of this without getting down to the real words rather than the summary words, or the high-level words, which don't tell you all the detail. Now, you know, I go into discussions there of how the clay, one word they use, the clay, is the clay of fear or dread. And it took me a fair amount of time to find out one of the words that he was using for clay was from an area in western Chaldea, where he was living, in a project that made clay of tinna, T-I-N-A. And I kept trying to figure out, why did he use that word for clay? It doesn't even mean clay. And it took a while until I found out that Nabataean fine painted pottery in those days was well known in the region, and it was made from clay mined in western Babylon at Ain at Tinna. But see, he'd used a colloquial term, Tinna, rather than the real word for clay. It wasn't Hebrew or anything, it was the name of a place, but you had to dig into history to find that. That's why it took so long tracing some of these things down. Anyway, it basically, in summary, it says that the aliens will come in and try to crossbreed with us. It won't work well, but they will take over the earth with the help of the Antichrist of this age, and he'll give them, in return for technology and the control of the planet, he'll give them some of those 10 regions of the earth for their own, and they'll totally control those areas and the inhabitants of them, the people of them. So they can heat them, they can cook them, they can do whatever they want to with them, but they will be under the charge of the alien. And that's basically what I cover in those first four verses there. And when you get down to Daniel, the last part of it, Daniel 11:36-39, it starts to talk about, you know, where we talk about the God of gods, he wants to put himself above them and that kind of stuff. And there's more coding in that one, dealing with the alien god and gods, which are basically beings with better technology than we've got, so it looks like magic, therefore they are quote-unquote gods with a little d, not the ultimate god or the god of gods, but just little gods. And it tells in here how he's going to have an inaccessible fortress. The satanic being comes down as the head of the alien, and it's a very strong hold, you know, hidden away, whether it be in solid earth or whether it be under the ocean or whether it be in orbit, I don't know, but we will not be able to access it. It will be totally protected in this location, the secret spot, as we're told to watch for, Matthew 24. Don't believe it if they say go see him in this secret place or wherever. And it even says in this translation that he is going to feign or pretend himself to be an alien god. You know, that Satan pretending to be God. You see what I'm saying? There's just such heavy, heavy, important things in this. I'm reading it again here while we're talking, and the hair on the back of my neck is getting out again. It's just been there all this time until now, and this is only a small fragment of the rest of the book of Daniel. We've got to get more people looking at this quickly. I think we need to have young people with Hebrew and translating abilities just dive in and take a lesson from what I've showed them how to do there and do what I could not do in 2 months. I mean, you know, 2 months I got 8 verses, that's all.
All right, now listen, I want to make sure I don't load up your telephones overnight. What are your normal hours, Mountain Time?
Mountain Time, we are up from 8 in the morning till 5 in the evening, and we certainly would like to have people ring during those hours and not on the weekends if we do try to.
And they can go to Standeo, Deyo.com, and order online, can they not?
They can, Standeyo.com, and you can read the news. You can dive over to Steve's page from our page, because my wife Holly does his website as well as ours every day.
And again, you know, Stan, every day I get calls and I get emails, and I think I'm now back up to 400 a day. For a while I was still 300 a day when I was on talk radio. Now that I'm off talk radio, my own show, meaning daily, the thing is I'm getting 400. And I got to say that this is that it's sinking in. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to let you know that the best sources, here's how I go public with something. And when I say, I quit trying to talk to people about stuff they can't handle. And I was advised to do that, and I thought, well, surely if people could really understand the depth of evil that was against them, they'd turn to Jesus. Wrong. And so, you know, for that, I'm truly sorry. But the thing is, Jesus said, if I've told you earthly things and you believe me not, how can I tell you heavenly things? And what, again, Stan, I believe that because of the cosmic conspiracy, this is God's time stamp on, you know, something you began 20-some years ago, actually almost 30 years ago, and now he's saying, in essence, to you, it's time, Stan. He's saying to me, Steve, it's time. He's saying to those who have warned, and when I wrote the book Aliens and Fallen Angels, for all of those of you who are skeptics, who are scientists, who are non-Christians, I would encourage you to read that book, Aliens and Fallen Angels. It's available either on my website or it's linked to from Stan's website. And I'd encourage you to read these things because they were written 15 years ago in my case, Stan's case 20-some years ago, and yet it's playing out like we're basically telling you it was going to play out. And that's not saying whoopee for us. That's saying hallelujah. Thank you for a God who loves his creation. You know what's amazing to me is God is in the process of redemption and the devil is in the process of destruction. And whoever's in the process of destruction, I don't believe, is in the process of redemption. So the idea of shooting the Tea Party, I don't know if you saw this today. This is a critical thing. Did you know that Tea Party attendees are now classified by the U.S. military as terrorists?
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes. It's bad. You know, Steve, you were saying about us doing all this stuff a long time ago. Quite a few people that have ordered your books and mine here in the last week have rung and we talked, and I've heard from many of them that they have been listening to you for years, and in my case, some of them longer than that, but they were saying, you know, it's so hard to talk to other people about this and the family and friends and stuff. They just, you know, don't believe this stuff. Things are wacky. He said, but now then, things are becoming kind of public knowledge, and it may be a good time for us to tell them. And so what I see is that what we have done, you and I, is informed a lot of potential witnesses for the Lord in these times. We've armed them with the knowledge that they're solid in that knowledge, and they'll be able to use the materials we've given them as factual things to now witness strongly to people when current events support what they're trying to tell them.
And isn't that what equipping the saints is all about?
Absolutely.
You know, and again, the thing is I find that most Christians, and I'm not picking on Christians, but I'm saying most professing Christians have no idea of the nature of the battle, what they're up against, and quite candidly, the majority I've met don't want anything to do with it. And I said, gentlemen, for you wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, and spiritual wickedness in heavenly places. And they say, oh yeah, my pastor doesn't teach on that, so therefore I'm not responsible for it. Very soon you're going to be responsible for things in your backyard that if you don't know how to deal with them, you may just end up smorgasbord. You know, maybe what they're going to call these new continents ruled by the aliens is Morlockville, out of the good night, the time machine. You remember that the Morlock were the cannibals that raised the Eloi for supper?
Yes.
Oh, brother, Morlocks and Warlocks. Stan Deo, thank you very much. 719-547-9100 during normal business hours, 8 to 5 Mountain, or order, go to StanDeo.com. Thank you, Stan.
Thank you, Steve. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.